This is the Infotainment podcast for our Inside Europe series. And in this show, we are focused on Greece. And I'm delighted to be joined by Antonis Klapsis from the University of the Peloponnese in Greece. And he's also the author of Unholy Alliance, the European Far Right and Putin's Russia. And we'll also be hearing from Georgios Samaras from University College London. Antonis, it's great to have you with us for the Infotainment podcast series. And I wanted to start off asking you about the rise of the far right and the evolution of the far right within Greece. Many people will be aware of Golden Dawn a few years ago when that became a sort of political force in the country. Obviously, things have changed since then. What is the status of the far right as you've studied it within Greece today?
First of all, thank you very much for the invitation. It is my pleasure to be with you. Concerning the rise of the far right in Greece, it is true that the phenomenon took the form of an avalanche in the last few years, especially during the economic crisis. During that time, the Golden Dawn managed to secure the third place in Greek elections time after time, and it secured roughly 10% of the popular vote, especially in the European elections of 2014. Gradually, it started to become less and less popular. And right now, its popularity have almost become zero, especially after most of the Golden Dawn leaders have been condemned and sent to prison for being members of an illegal organization. This does not mean, however, that the far right has diminished to the point that there is no far right in the Greek political spectrum. What is also true is that far-right leanings of the Greek public opinion have been here for decades. What changed was the fact that they were expressed publicly, openly, through a neo-Nazi political party as it was Golden Dawn. Nowadays, there are other far-right political parties or extreme-right political parties or what I prefer to call alt-right. Political parties, which means that they do not have, let's say, neo-Nazi leanings, as it was the case of Golden Dawn, but still they are populist, they are anti-immigrant, they are nationalist, and they are talking about the return to a nationalist past, according to which, through which Greece and the Greeks will secure, let's say, a heavenly future, which is of course out of the question, but still they have a certain appeal to the Greek public opinion.
And I mean, when we discussed the rise of political forces like Alternative for Deutschland in the show in the series on Germany, one of the things that was interesting to note was that although that party, although it has risen since it started, only polled about 10% in the German elections, that it dominated on social media. And I think similarly for the show on Italy in this series, we saw something similar as well, that more extreme political forces tended to dominate the conversation on social media. I wonder, is that reflected in what you see in Greece as well? Has social media become a hotbed for more extreme politics?
I would say that the political debate was defined up to a certain extent by the expression of opinions of far-right parties. I will just give you an example. When it comes to dealing with migrant and refugee flows, for example, from Turkey to Greece, the public debate in Greece was practically defined by the far-right, because even moderate-right political personalities and moderate political parties belonging to the center-right, were obliged somehow to change their agenda and to change the way they expressed their opinions, at least publicly, in order to deter far-right from securing an even better percentage of the public opinion. I think this is not only a Greek phenomenon. This is what is going on all over Europe, and the Alternative for Deutschland is another example. So the far-right parties have an interesting feature. Even though they cannot secure the support of the majority of the public opinion, they can affect the way people discuss about certain issues, hot issues, like the refugee or the refugee question, let's say, or the migrant question, and they appear to be in a better position to express the views of many people who do not belong actually to the far right. So they have a greater impact on public opinion than they have on their on the votes of people.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you focused on the connections between Russia and Putin's government mm-hmm. and the far right across Europe, and something we've discussed mm-hmm. in this series, in particular, how Russia has sought to promote division within European countries, and often done that by direct interference using its agencies like the Internet Research Agency, which runs social media back campaigns, or looking to identify voices within those countries that are seeking to create or promote divisions themselves. And how has this manifested in Greece? I mean, we're aware certainly of a very significant Russian emigre population, increasingly influential in Cyprus, but I'd be interested to know how this has manifested itself in Greece itself.
You know, being a Greek and living in Greek, I'm familiar with ancient Greek mythology as well. Mm. One of the features of ancient Greek mythology was the notion of the Trojan horse,
yeah.
which the Greeks used in order, you know, to take over Troy in the Trojan War. So I think this is what the Russians have been trying to do. They are trying to use far-right political parties as Trojan horses in order to exercise pressure from within to governments, to exercise influence on elections, and to exercise influence in general in political debate. In the case of Greece, it is true, as in other cases in Europe, it is true that Moscow has tried to secure close relations with far-right parties, not only with Golden Dawn, but also with the Independent Greeks, which was a party that actually participated in the formation of a government with Syriza in 2015. Mm. And they also tried to take advantage of a feature which is not unique in Europe, but okay, it is different in Greece than in other Western European countries. You know, the Greeks are Orthodox in terms of religion. So the Russians being Orthodox, they also tried to take advantage of this religious connection between the two peoples. It is also true that for a part of the Greek public opinion, Russia has been seen as a great power that somehow, magically, will help Greece in order to deter Turkey, for example, or to find solutions to other problems. Let's say in 2014 or in 2015, there were many people saying, not only belonging to the far right, but also belonging to the radical left, that Russia would be an alternative in the financial problem of Greece. Of course, this proved to be an illusion, but if you walk down the street, you will see many people, even today, who will say that Russia is an ally for Greece, even though reality proves exactly the opposite. There is also another interesting thing. We all know that Putin is, you know, a democratically elected leader, of course, but okay, he is not the most democratic person, political personality in general, to put it mildly. He is a semi-authoritarian leader who is ruling Russia with an iron fist. One would expect that this would be somehow unpopular to many people in the West, including to people in Greece. But I think that to a part of the Greek public opinion, the fact that Putin is a semi-authoritarian leader is not seen as a disadvantage, but is rather seen as an advantage. He is the strong personality who has managed to save Russia, who has managed to make Russia great again, and so on. And there are many people who feel that this is the way to move forward in Western European countries, including Greece, a traditional personality who will rule countries with an iron fist.
That's, I think it's a really important point. And in the podcast on Italy, we discussed this and how in Italy, there have been times in Italy's past where, you know, the sort of Western style democracy only works if it works. And if it doesn't work, then people look for the strong leader. And of course, in the lives of many older people living in Greece will remember a time when Greece was ruled by an authoritarian government. So do you think people are actually, they would be quite receptive to going back to that if that looked like a better alternative?
I'm not saying that the majority of people is looking for this kind of solution, of an authoritarian solution. What I'm saying is that there are many people who feel that liberal democracy is more of a problem than a solution to the problem itself.
Yeah.
So they feel that by going back to the roots, let's say by safeguarding traditional values, such as the value of family, the value of, of nationalism and so on, they will secure a better future for themselves and for their children. And in this sense, they see Putin as the person who expresses their traditional belief. Just to give you an example, as you know, among other things, Putin has an anti-LGBTQ agenda, and he's regularly referring to the fact that being gay, for example, is a sort of an anomaly. We should not we should keep our religious and family traditions and so on. To a certain part of Greek public opinion, this is heard as a positive thing. That okay, he's speaking what we have in mind, and he's just expressing the average person in the street. So if you combine all these pieces of the puzzle, orthodoxy on the one hand, authoritarianism on the other, the feeling of insecurity towards external pressures and so on, you have the whole picture of why Putin's Russia seems to be quite well received in Greek public opinion. And if you see, for example, polls which measure the popularity of foreign leaders in Greece, you will see that Putin is one of the mostly well received in Greek public opinion.
One of the things we looked at in this series is where you have more extreme political parties on the rise. There could be reasons in society for that, and economic failure being one of them, you know, divisions around immigration being another. But along with it has come a sort of a trend of disinformation that is seeking to undermine public confidence in the institutions of their country. Mm-hmm. And one of the counterweights to that seems to be where a country has got quite strong traditional media, quite strong institutions, which enable an alternative voice to push back. But if you're in a country which doesn't have those so much, or those traditional sort of institutions are weaker, then what people see and hear on social media, what people see and hear from alternative voices becomes stronger. And how would you characterize the media in Greece in that respect?
First of all, just to say something on what you said at the beginning, I think what fuels far-right political parties is the sense of insecurity that many people have. This insecurity might be economic, it might be social, it might be the insecurity towards the stranger, the migrant, and so on. But in general, what far-right political parties are trying to do, and this includes Greek far-right political parties, is to address the insecurity that many people feel. This is the basis of their success whenever they are successful. This is not a Greek phenomenon, as I said before, it's a pan-European phenomenon. When it comes to the media now, I think that especially not traditional media, but you know, the electronic media, such as Facebook, Twitter, whatever, have given far-right political parties the opportunity to reach an audience that was unreachable for them in the not-so-distant past. They are able to express openly and publicly opinions and reach a greater audience, which means that they can affect many more people than in the past. And they use social media, let's say, but not only social media, in order to express even violent behaviors. And what is quite interesting is the fact that the promotion, the expression of violent, the public expression of violent behaviors has proven not to be a disadvantage for far-right political parties, but rather an advantage. I will just give you an example related with the Golden Dawn, but which I think is quite characteristic on how even violence can become an advantage for far-right political parties rather than a disadvantage. In the elections of the Golden Dawn appeared as a major phenomenon in the elections of May 2012 in Greece. We had a second election in June 2012. In the meantime, Golden Dawn lost a fraction of its popularity. There was an incident between the two elections of a member of Golden Dawn who slapped publicly on television a candidate of the Greek Communist Party. So he expressed violence not only in words, but also in actions. Even though Golden Dawn lost a fraction of its popularity, the only place in Greece where Golden Dawn did not lose a fraction of its popularity was the place where this candidate was actually a candidate for Golden Dawn again. So the public opinion not only did not reject his violent behavior, but somehow it approved this behavior in the ballot. I'm afraid that what we have in mind as a liberal way of thinking is not the way that followers of far-right political parties have in mind.
Thank you. I think that's really important. Just a final question from me. I mean, we've seen across Europe, we've seen sort of social media campaigns in particular that promote division, that feed on uncertainty, that target people who are vulnerable. And those topics tend to move around as well. So you often see similar networks that have been involved in spreading disinformation around COVID, and indeed by undermining mm-hmm. public trust in public institutions, you know, spreading anti-vaccine conspiracy theories has been one of the ways people have done that. So I just think, in closing, I wondered whether that was something you'd looked at, and whether there have been similar problems in Greece of orchestrated campaigns around sort of around the COVID vaccine that have increased rates of vaccine hesitancy. I appreciate in the tourist areas of Greece, there was a very concerted effort to make sure that they could reopen this summer. But outside of those areas, Do you think this has been a problem?
I think that in general, there is an anti-vaccine campaign in Greece, which is fueled not only by far-right political parties, I have to say, but also by far-left political parties as well. By people who are ultra-religious and so on. So there is a wide spectrum of people who are involved in this anti-vaccine campaign. People who are not related with each other, but despite a completely different political or ideological beliefs, they agree that, let's say, the vaccines are a menace for humanity. They will... They will harm us or whatever. I'm afraid that the COVID pandemic has given these not political parties, but these people in general, no matter where they belong, politically speaking, they have given these people an opportunity to find themselves in the epicenter of public attention once more, and they are very active on social media. They are very active in trying to prevent others from getting being vaccinated, and I'm afraid that this might be the beginning of a second anti-establishment wave, which might be expressed also politically in the elections in elections in the future.
Well, Antonis, thank you so much for joining us from the podcast. It's been great to discuss this with you.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
I'm joined now in the studio by Georgios Samaras from University College London. Georgios, it's great to have you with us on the podcast. Now, listening to what Antonis had to say, I think there's one big question that comes out of this. You know, Greece is seen, you know, by historians and scholars as the birthplace of democracy. But how secure is democracy in a country like Greece? I mean, Antonis raised the specter of the idea that you know, if things aren't going great, you know, people in Greece might look to the sort of a dominant figure or personality that could take the country in the direction they want it to go, and that there is still a general weariness in the country that is a hangover from not just the pandemic, but the financial crisis before that, and that a lot of the concerns we see amplified on social media are to some extent based on general concerns about the direction of the country itself.
I think that the past decade has shown us that as a result of the rise of Golden Dawn, democracy was not safe. Mm. And Golden Dawn was the first openly neo-Nazi party that made it to the parliament of a European nation after World War II. Some people, of course, gave Golden Dawn a voice. Mm. Some people voted for Golden Dawn, and as a result of those decisions, of course, from the population, Golden Dawn showed that parties can challenge democracy.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not sure about how things will go. Golden Dawn was convicted, was sentenced, and there are no neo-Nazi parties in the parliament. But remnants are still out there.
Yeah.
And the way extremism has been rising in the last 12 to 13 years in the country, I believe that especially mainstream parties have to step up. They need to proceed with some very meaningful decisions related to law and how law perceives and tackles a phenomena like far-right extremism. On the other hand, of course, during the pandemic, a lot of things have happened in the background, including the new coalitions that were born and small parties that have been trying to somehow, you know, amplify their voices on social media, focusing on vaccines, on the pandemic, on lockdowns. It's a very, I would call it an experimental period, experimental phase for Greek politics. Crisis has ended. The pandemic hopefully is heading to an end. And at the same time, there are no parties like Golden Dawn. We'll have to wait and see how other parties might try to imitate what Golden Dawn started.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big questions we discuss, I think, throughout this series, and for anyone who's involved in, I think, the conversations around social media regulation and the influence of platforms like Facebook on politics, is if, you know, when you go on social media in a country and you look at the politics of that country through social media, is what you're seeing merely a reflection of what is there? So if there is more extremism, is it because people's own opinions are becoming more extreme and therefore Facebook reflects that? Or is it there's something about social media which is driving division, which is accelerating division, making these problems worse, creating a debate where the more extreme voices tend to have a bigger share of voice? And when you look at politics in Greece in your research, do you think that is happening? Do you think the way social media platforms like Facebook are being used is actually helping to create a more extreme form of politics?
Yeah, definitely. There are a lot of ways to achieve that. And as we've seen recently, even with parties that are currently in the parliament, including Greek Solution, which is led by this TV presenter called Kyriakos Velopoulos, they have been actually invested in social media and they've managed to amplify their voices, which are, I would say, controversial. The least basic controversial thing that I know about this party is that they've been spreading conspiracy theories about the pandemic. Apart from that, they have been anti-Semitic. They've been trying to be quite bold about their approach in politics by explaining that they're far-right, you know, party, and they're here to represent that scene. When this is happening within the parliament of a European country again, and when a party that is quite popular, you know, in the far-right scene is able to do this without being regulated, of course social media are going to amplify those voices and they're going to allow them to become more, I would say, relevant in the political scene. So looking at Facebook, especially at Facebook, there is no doubt that Facebook has allowed parties like Greek Solution to surface and previously Golden Dawn.
Yeah.
And if we look at Golden Dawn and how Golden Dawn organized on Facebook, that was their only channel in the past decade because Golden Dawn was isolated by mainstream media. It had no voice in the mainstream media. Their spokesperson and the majority of the MPs were banned from mainstream media. So they had to use social media instead. And they achieved something that no one else has achieved so far in Greek politics, you know, organized on social media as a political party, which led to a 10% in 2014. Mm. Similarly, in 2019, after the 2019 election, there is no doubt that nothing has changed yet. Far-right parties will keep organizing. They benefit from those divisions that we see that are fueled and also observed on Facebook, mostly on Facebook and YouTube, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of issues, I mean, to what extent is migration, the debate around migration in Greece, which is, you know, Greece really is on the front, the European front line in terms of receiving migrants from the Eastern Mediterranean in particular. Is it hot topic issues like that which are being used to create divisions, or is this a more widespread problem in terms of the topics people talk about within, say, groups on Facebook discussing more extreme ideas?
Migration is a hot topic in Greece, and after New Democracy won the election of 2019, they have taken a more aggressive stance against towards migration and refugees from the east. So I would say that on one hand, the government has used some shady tactics in recent years to stop refugees from coming to the country. And this has created more divisions in the parliament too. Now, when it comes to social media, right-wing and far-right-wing circles have been more vocal about their views recently, especially on migration, and especially because of the government's response to migration. Previously, Syriza was more flexible, and those migration policies and, of course, the treaty with Turkey made things a bit easier for refugee waves between 2016 and 2019. Because of the pandemic, because of the new restrictions imposed and the way some politicians targeted migration even during the COVID pandemic, I would say that again, some Facebook groups and some big Facebook groups, I know the small ones, and some alternative media have managed to benefit from this uncertainty, and they have targeted migration. So recently, especially during the pandemic, and as a result of new policies introduced by the government, yes, migration has become a very significant issue amongst far-right circles well.
And has there been, do you think, through the use of social media, particularly by more extreme groups, a process of undermining traditional media in Greece, whereby the role of traditional media, both broadcasting and newspapers, in being the authoritative voice has gone, and that actually people get their news and information from elsewhere? Part of the negative consequence of that can be people on the whole no longer really know what to believe anymore. You believe the news you want to believe rather than comparing those opinions against, if you like, an opinion of record.
People stopped trusting mainstream media in Greece. Mm. There is, especially during the crisis. Mm. The crisis made things quite difficult, especially for traditional and old, I would say the most popular private channels in the country. So people turned to social media with hoping that they might get some more accurate views about what's happening in Greece and how, you know, to somehow approach and discuss the financial crisis. Because of the way mainstream media have supported austerity from 2012 to 2016, people were in disbelief, you know. People, I've been reading about polls, I've been reading about opinions in general in the country. People stopped trusting mainstream media. So social media provided fertile ground for people who wanted to read the news in a different way from different sources. And of course, we know how misinformation and disinformation have been rising on social media. Yeah. There have been figures and lots of small groups and pages who have been, again, investing a lot of money to and spreading both manipulated news and falsified information about fiscal crisis, about the pandemic, about migration, about everything. Yeah. So yes, people have been using social media more than usual, and they do. Yeah. So, like, that the trust in mainstream media is collapsing.
Yeah. I mean, there's been research done, some of it commissioned by Facebook, looking at the role Facebook plays in promoting extremist groups and people to join Facebook groups that share extremist content at Facebook's active recommendation. Another one of the problems that we've seen identified is that outside of English, and even really outside of American English, there's very little investment in content moderation, in identifying likely sources of harm. I would imagine Facebook's investment in Greece and in Greek as a language is probably pretty small. I mean, from the work you've done, do you think there is any proper monitoring, or is it a complete Wild West in terms of social media and politics in Greece?
Surprisingly, Facebook went after Golden Dawn And they were quite quick to act in 2014, if I remember correctly, May 2014. Before the European election of that year, they started taking down most of the profiles of the party. But that was, again, the direct result of user reports, because they do rely on user reports. What I discovered in my research is that because of how anti-fascist movements have been actively trying to identify movements and pages affiliated to Golden Dawn on social media, Facebook has relied on those reports. And this has been a very notable battle on Greek social media. However, in recent years, the situation has changed because Facebook took into account what the criminal, you know, investigation showed about into Golden Dawn. Golden Dawn was involved in the murders of a number of left-wing activists, including Pavlos Fissas in 2013, and also migrants in the center of Athens. So Facebook took those reports into account, and they banned both MPs and the party's pages. I've not seen a similar action against smaller and more underground extremist groups. I've discovered a lot of pages, a lot of groups that remain private, and even through reports, it doesn't seem to be, there is no response by Facebook towards that. And I've been investigating Facebook, and I can tell that, yes, because of the Greek language, it's very difficult to monitor and moderate that content. And there is a new unit, if I remember correctly, in Athens right now, of a moderation team that was actually organized by Facebook in a new building. Which apparently is not doing that well. The majority of the people working for that unit have been experiencing mental health issues because of the content that they're exposed to. It's a small team, and there have been reports about this. So Facebook has not been able to effectively come up with a solution to tackle hate speech or such extremist activity on Greek social media. It goes without saying that this is going to be an ongoing issue for the next few years unless there are new regulations.
I mean, just in closing, I mean, do you think that initiatives at a European level, like the Digital Services Act, are going to make any real difference here? And if not, what do you think the solution will be for a country like Greece?
Hate speech regulations have worked well in the last 4 to 5 years, but more steps are needed, more radical steps here. Because without radical steps, we've been discussing about Facebook for the last 10 minutes. It's also YouTube, it's also Twitter.
Yeah.
And extremist activity can be seen everywhere. In my very humble opinion, and after seeing the effects of the crisis in Greece, and also the effects of the crisis on social media and the rhetoric on social media, EU needs to come up with some more effective laws that will aim to regulate social media and also come up with stricter anti-hate speech approaches. It's all about understanding the nature of the content shared and the actors who are involved in this. And I'm sure that Facebook will eventually be able to target and find such groups that are spreading misinformation or engaging in extremist activity. Much more needs to be done towards that direction.
If that doesn't happen, I mean, do you fear for the future of the politics of a country like Greece?
I mean, as a researcher and while doing my PhD at King's College London, I was targeted by Golden Dawn. I received emails with threats, I received threats on social media, and I was just a PhD researcher back then. So I think that the way Golden Dawn was allowed to roam free for so many years has damaged democracy on all levels. And it has given people the idea that they're able to do whatever they like, especially supporters of such parties. So social media environment right now in Greece is quite, I would say, it can be infiltrated. So Greek democracy right now is definitely in danger because of social media regulations that allow divisions to be amplified. And Greek democracy has to somehow be protected. So it's all about regulations coming from the EU and also Greece also stepping up and making some meaningful decisions in order to moderate what's happening on most platforms. There is no other way to deal with this. And most recently, there has been more extremist activity in North Greece with new groups organizing within education at secondary schools. This is something new that we haven't witnessed before, but now it becomes obvious that the way Golden Dawn targeted younger generations aged between 17 and 30, was a strategy that worked. So similar groups will target younger generations again if nothing changes on social media.
Important point on which to end. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to the Infotagen podcast focused on Greece, hosted by me, Damien Collins, and featuring Antonis Klapsis and Georgios Samaras. The show was produced by David Dargahi. You can find out more about Infotagen at infotagen.com and also support the show by becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/infotagenpodcast. All the funds raised go back in towards the production of this show. Thank you. Until next time.